Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Last week, as part of our Taking Care of You in 2022 series, we invited two experts on to talk about modern strategies to manage and grow your money. Because with the start of a new year comes new opportunity for new investments, new budgeting goals, or maybe hitting a financial milestone you've been trying to reach for a while. The segment was so popular and the phone lines were so full that we decided to invite back the experts, Joe Saul Sehi and Emily Guy Birkin. Their new book is called Stacked: Your Super Serious Guide to Money. Unfortunately, Emily couldn't join us today, but Joel Saul Sehi, former financial advisor and creator and co-host of the Stacking Benjamins podcast, was able to come on back and joins me again to give a little more guidance and take your personal financial questions. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Allison. I don't think I can compete with Elvis Costello on Friday. Holy cow, but I'll do my best.
I'm sure you'll do just fine. And everybody, just for the record, the segment contains opinions and suggestions about personal finance, but is not intended to replace a professional consultation. So listeners, if we want to get in on this, what questions do you have about your own personal finance? Maybe you want some of the best strategies to manage and grow your own finances responsibly. Call in for a question with a question for Joe Saul Sehi, co-author of the book Stacked: Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Here is the phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can also tweet to us at All of It WNYC, or if you want to remain anonymous, you can send us a DM via Instagram. That is also at All of It WNYC. Whether you're thinking about retirement or you're just starting out, maybe you have a question that you'd like to get answered or just an opinion, 212-433-9692. All right, so Joe, we pulled together some of the questions from last time that we weren't able to get to that listeners had called in or tweeted to us. So let's go. This one is from Instagram. If I want to invest now in something for my young children but can't invest in stocks, what do you recommend I invest in? Do you like index funds?
Oh, I love index funds, Allison. But and here's what I like even better. I love the fact that this money has a specific goal, because there's this wide world of investments out there, and people, you know, we get this fear of missing out. We get frustrated because how do we know everything about everything? Well, when we begin with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey famously said in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Affected People, we then narrow the range of investments that we really need to choose from. And for that time frame, assuming that the children are very old, that they have at least 10 years to go, I really like that. Now, if it's specifically for college, there are index funds inside of a thing called a 529 plan, and those are state-sponsored plans. And so I might even go investigate a 529 plan to see if I can also get some good tax treatment on top of that index fund.
Tell folks how the 529s work. They're kind of great if you've got little kids.
Yeah, you put money in. You don't get a tax benefit today, but as long as you take it out for qualified college expenses, money then comes out tax-free. So all the growth that you have over time, which given 10 years or longer should be a nice amount of growth, you'll be able to take all that growth out tax-free. Here's something else that's really neat. If you're saving with it for a child when they're very young, you don't know what they're going to do, and you don't know how much money you're going to need. I mean, looking at it now, you're going to need tons of money, right, based on the way college costs have been going. But let's say they get scholarships. Well, the cool thing about a 529 plan is you're allowed to change the beneficiary to someone else in the family. So you could make it yourself, and as long as you want to take classes, or you could make it a younger sibling, or maybe a niece or a nephew, or somebody else in the family, or your children's children. It can really become kind of a education trust for your family, which is pretty exciting.
Good luck with your kiddos. This is from Twitter. Can I invest IRA money in individual stocks?
You can. All you have to have is a brokerage account that does that. And there's tons of major brokerage accounts out there to choose from. I would look at the fees that are involved. I would also look at the different things to analyze stocks. The frustration I have with individual stocks is that you have to continually weed that garden. And often back, I haven't been a financial planner, Allison, in a long time, but when I was a financial planner, I would find these people who had stocks that were still hanging out that they hadn't looked at in 10 or 15 years, and they really needed a serious weeding to make sure that they still had a good diversified collection of stocks.
Another tweet from the other day. Any thoughts on taking Social Security at 66 and a half versus age 70 if you are still working?
Oh, great question, because you may end up paying some tax on that Social Security. You know, here's the general rule of thumb. General rule is Social Security grows at the benefit grows at about 8% per year as you don't take it. So the longer you can hold off for many people, the better. But we also, Allison, as you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know how long we're going to live. So I look at lifespans. I also look at my need for money. So by all means, if you need the money at 66, take it at 66. But the longer you can delay, assuming that you're going to live for a good long time, generally the better off you're going to be.
All right. We've got two more from the other day, and then we'll get to some calls from today. Chris called us in from Warwick, New York, and he called last week during the show, and he said he's a mail carrier with a 401k and no pension. His wife just got a good job with benefits that are better than his. He's wondering how they should be thinking about retirement.
Oh, I love that. Because once again, when you start with that end in mind and you work backwards, it makes it so much easier. So the first thing I would do is I would look at how much you need to save for retirement. Now, most of the major companies out there, the asset management companies, have free calculators. There are also some that I like that you can pay a little bit of money for to calculate how much. But once you know how much to save and what rate of return you need on that money, that then again focuses this huge range of investment choices down to just a few types that historically have helped you make your goal. So you begin by knowing when you're going to need the money and work backward. But here's what I like. Is it if she has great benefits and she has a pension and he doesn't, look at this, instead of looking at them as two separate pots, kind of put them together as one pot. And I'll give you an example. Back when I was a financial planner, if one spouse had great 401k investments in, let's say, U.S. stocks, and the other person had some good international choices, we might load up on international choices in one and then load up on domestic index funds on the other one. So that if anybody looks at these two pies individually, they look awful. But assuming they're going to retire together, you put it together, you kind of get the best of both worlds. So I would take all of their benefits and lay them out and kind of pick and choose. This is best in hers, this is best in his, and put together a plan that's much more cohesive than what most people do, which is try to do the same thing in both that doesn't work as well.
All right, last one from last week. We got our house cleaned up. This is Wendy from Maplewood. She called us and she said she doesn't have the cash on hand to send her kid to college. What's best? Loan in the kid's name? Something else?
Oh, boy. This is obviously very difficult because, you know, Allison, college has gotten so expensive, right? So I think the answer is not going to be one or the other. It's going to be a little bit of all the above. So looking at a couple things, had I known this, by the way, it took me 7 years to go to college because I was paying my own way through. So 7 years to get my bachelor's degree, but I was taking just a couple classes at a time. Had I known what I was doing, and this is a long time ago, and I think it's even more to the point today, had I known how financial aid works, I would have been able to graduate in 4 or maybe 5 years, because what I did was spent a lot of time working when I could have used financial aid programs possibly to get grants or scholarships, need-based aid. So the first thing I'd explore is what need-based aid is out there and how does this thing, there's a little thing called the expected family contribution. And I would love, if I were back in my financial planning days, I would love to know where this family sat when it came to expected family contribution. Now, there are plenty of sites online that you can Google to look that up, how expected family contribution works. Once I know that, then I think I put a plan together based on that. But definitely, the more I can stay away from loans. We're still seeing, we haven't seen the other shoe drop, as you know, Allison, when it comes to loans.
Yeah.
So I'm really reticent to take out money I got to pay back later. So any way I can avoid that is great. But if I have to, and I know what the ROI is, okay, loans are kind of my last choice.
Joe, you did it. Thank you so much for taking care of our callers from last week. Joe Salci, hi. The name of the book is Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. He's also the host of the Stacking Benjamins podcast. Okay, folks who have called in today, let's get to you. And then I also want to get to some of the points you make in your book. But Matt has been holding since the very beginning of this segment. Matt is calling in from Asbury Park on line two. Hi, Matt.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I've recently landed a new job with a significant pay increase, and I'm looking to save some money toward a down payment toward a home, but I've also got significant student loan debt. So I'm trying to figure out how to balance in which I should tackle first or how to do both at the same time.
Matt, what's the interest rate on your student loan debt?
The highest one's around 6.7%.
Okay. The reason I ask that is because of the fact that there's an arbitrage kind of game you can play. If the interest rate is really low, then I really like saving toward long-term goals. Now, saving for a house is going to be a little bit of a different deal because of the fact that that you're going to, especially once again, if we begin with the end in mind, you're going to be saving into spots where that money's sitting in a guaranteed account. So it's there when you need it. We're not going to use the stock market. We're not going to invest in long-term diversified real estate like a REIT. We're not going to do any of that stuff. So we know we're going to earn a really low rate of return on this money. So, if you and I were sitting at a table together, my first question would be, what are your feelings about debt? What's the payment? And if we calculate ahead of time what that house payment is going to be of the house that you intend to live in, is it possible to still make your student loan payment and make that mortgage payment and save for the future at the same time? So I would do that math first to see how the budget shakes out. And then I think that's going to inform your decision. But without knowing those numbers, it's very hard to just say one or the other. Frankly, you know, most people, Matt, most people that are wealthy have a disposition against debt. In fact, it's funny, even though you see wealthy people will sometimes use leverage, a study by a guy named Wes Moss, who has a new book about the happiest retirees, talks about how the happiest retirees are people that have no debt, even though they could have that stretch that debt out for a long time. That freedom from worry is great. So I'm predisposed to say try to get rid of the debt quicker, but I'd also do that math around how can you make the mortgage work and make the debt payment work while you're still saving.
Matt, good luck to you. Let's go to Kate in Manhattan on line one. Hi, Kate. Thanks for calling in. What's going on in your world?
Hello. So I have an inheritance from my dad, who was a college professor, so it was in TIA. And I, you know, shifted it over to my name, so it's in an, I guess it's called, I don't know if it's called an inherited TIA, but it's still in TIA where it seems to be growing really well. Now, I also have some money invested in Vanguard funds through Chase that's also doing well, and my fellow at Chase that helps me is suggesting I could move my money from TIA to Vanguard under the Chase umbrella. One advantage might be I would get more individual attention, but I'm sort of reticent to move it. Do you have any thoughts about Vanguard funds versus TIA if I just want that money to grow as best as possible?
Yeah, great, great, great question. And the thing I actually have a comment about first is actually your advisor, because if you're not sure you trust your advisor, I'm not sure that should be your advisor. For me, when it comes to people that are my advisors, they make me smarter and I have to implicitly trust those people. And if I don't, I think it might be time to find a new one. Now, if they're moving it, and by the way, I also think that the person partly is moving it because of the fact they do want to manage all of your money in-house. But I don't know if that helps you or not. If you feel like it helps you to have that person who's making the transactions on your behalf, they're making you smarter then I think that it's a good move. If not, then having some money in TIA, if it's still doing well and you like it, versus money in Vanguard, I don't know that I have that much of an opinion on it without knowing the overall asset allocation. Like, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Allison, we always begin with the end in mind, right? So if we start with what the goal is and work backward, what mix of investments gets us there? Mm-hmm. So that's the first question I would ask. And then it's easy to see which investments stay and which investments go.
Good luck with that. My guest is Joe Saul Sehy. He's the co-host of the Stacking Benjamins podcast and co-author of the book Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. It's out now. You know, in your book, you write about the difference between tracking and budgeting when it comes to spending. If someone's looking at how they're going to manage their money this year, tell us a little bit about the difference. What does each provide? How do they work together?
Well, tracking is fantastic, Allison, because you can see where you messed up. So if you keep a record of all those things and you look at them, my spouse Cheryl and I, we have a meeting every week, and you don't have to have a spouse to do this. You just set a time aside every week and scroll through your expenses and look and see where did I spend money and which ones should I have not spent money. But tracking is not the same as budgeting. And to give you a good analogy there, Thomas Jefferson was a phenomenal tracker of money. He detailed every single expense, and anyone who knows anything about Thomas Jefferson knows he was also up to his eyeballs in debt, and he was horrible with money. So even though he tracked everything, he didn't seem to have a plan, at least that we know of, to actually do things better tomorrow. And that's what a budget is. So if you think about in the 50s when people would bring home their paycheck and they would put them in envelopes, there are now envelope systems for today that are on your phone. There's apps out there that you can use that are the modern day equivalent of envelopes, and using it, either that or some sort of a budget where you just ask yourself, how am I going to spend money next week, next month, using that tracking that you did of the past, I think is the perfect 1-2 punch. But just tracking your expenses with an app like Mint or one of the other popular apps out there isn't going to be enough to help you solve your long-term spending problems.
Via Instagram, I'm an artist with no money. How and who do I ask for help to begin with financial planning?
Oh, there's this book I know. No,
it's a good book, I have to say. I'll say it for you.
Well, thank you. We had a lot of fun with it, and I think we covered the basics. But really, what you want, this actually goes back to the discussion that we had earlier about advisors. And there are advisors that you don't want, and there are advisors that you do want. You know, early on in my life, I was a mess with money, and I knew nothing about money. I was an English major, Allison, and I really had some big struggles with money on my own, and I had to learn about it. But the first thing I had to learn was, who are the right people to have in my corner? And I want to be the dumbest person in the room, any room I go into. And I think about, if we think about ourselves as a company, and a company that I have a lot of high regard for is General Motors. Not that they've done anything wow, spectacular, but the fact that General Motors, as a guy who's from Detroit, that General Motors has managed to stay relevant when they were such a legacy company. Mary Barra has done a phenomenal job of keeping that company relevant over time. Now, she didn't do that by having all these vice presidents, and she comes in and says, okay, I'll be back in 6 months, and you tell me how we do this car thing, which is what a lot of people do with their advisors. She knows everything about a car. I bet she knows exactly what's going on underneath the hood of every vehicle that comes off that assembly line, but she still has people around her to make her smarter and to challenge her. And so that's the thing I would do, is look for advisors, and generally those are going to be fee-only advisors, and make sure there's something called a fiduciary. A fiduciary is somebody who is required by law to work in your best interest, and everything they say has to be in your best interest. But even more than that, when you're interviewing people, and I wouldn't interview just one, I would interview several so that you know kind of the game that different advisors play, and you can put them against each other. I would look for somebody that has the heart of a teacher and can teach you as an artist, because frankly, artists, and I know many of my friends are artists, and when income is coming in infrequently, and sometimes when it does come in, it comes in big chunks, you definitely have to have a really good money management system to get through those lean times.
Is there any particular question you can ask a potential financial advisor which will be telling?
You know what? If you're meeting with them in person, it's not even asking the financial advisor, Allison. I used to go into a lot of different offices because of the nature of my particular practice. So I go have meetings at offices all over the Midwest. And what I found was if the receptionist and the other people in the office seem disgruntled, that always, from a guy who's been around, that always comes from the top. And the advisor who's running that office is probably awful to work with. And yet, when I found great advisors, their receptionist was always happy. Their support people were happy. Everybody seemed to be as happy as their clients were. And working side by side with many of these people for 16 years, just that alone, I think, is good. And on the website side, are they leading with product or are they leading with process? In other words, if somebody starts off by asking you, "What's your goal and how do you, what are you trying to achieve?" That's somebody I want to talk to. If it's somebody that says, "Hey, I have this magic bullet, this magic thing that will help solve your financial problems," and they haven't asked you anything about you, you need to run.
Joe Saul Sehi's book is called Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Let's get a couple more calls in here. Carrie on line 6. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Allison. Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for covering this and giving so much airtime to this important topic. My question is about IRAs and, in particular, inheritance IRAs. Very quickly, I'll let you know that my parents had the bulk of their savings in IRA accounts. My dad died in 2020, and he left one account to me and my brother, and they just changed the laws on inheritance IRAs on December 31st, 2019. And now there is you have to spend the funds within 10 years. This has a huge impact on, the adult children of parents who are leaving IRA accounts to their kids, and probably on average to, earners who are maybe, in the peak of their careers, like me. And so it really, great for my brother who never finished college, working two jobs, really saved him during this pandemic to have access to this money. But it left some really tough choices for me. And I did something, as my financial planner told me, is like very unorthodox. I became part of the Great Resignation and decided that I would use my dad's inheritance and take sort of a sabbatical and help my husband with the family business. But what I also saw was, taking over my parents' taxes. My mother's in end-stage dementia. So I filed 2019 and 2020 taxes and for the first time looked at their finances. And, he was taking out huge lump sums.
I need to dive in. Help me
cover my mother's care.
Carrie, I need you to help just to get to your question because we've got a couple other people on the phone.
Right. Here are just three examples of how financially injured, people can be with inheritance IRAs, and what advice do you have?
Yeah. Oh, and this is such an issue, and you're exactly right on the game, and it's not a game, has changed with that law change where the money has to come out over 10 years. This, to begin with, knowing that all that money is going to be taxable to you as you pull it out, taking it out in even installments over the 10-year period is the default strategy. However, if you're looking at, and you mentioned that you're part of the Great Resignation, so your tax pictures change, there also is a big point in looking at this year by year and knowing how taxes graduate. So as an example, let's say, and I'm just going to say this for example, let's say that the tax bracket changes at $50,000 and you're at $42,000. Well, there's not going to be any additional tax penalty to take out an additional $8,000 this year to make sure that you get that money all out at the lowest tax rate possible. So this is going to be a year-by-year thing where you take a look at your tax situation that year and where the next tax bracket is and try to get right up underneath that with as much money as you can so that we all love our Uncle Sam in Washington, Allison, but we don't want to give them more than our fair share.
I'm supposed to wrap, but I do want to ask one question, and if you can answer quickly, because a lot of people have it.
Yes.
If someone wants to invest ethically, They're looking for a way to invest in a way that aligns with their values. Can you give them one hint of a place to start?
Yeah, both BlackRock and Vanguard have phenomenal products there. And just as an aside, people used to say, it used to be a thing that older financial planners thought, you'd lose money by doing that. People would look at you and go, hey, that's nice, but why would you do that when you're losing so much money? Actually, studies show now you make more money investing that way the last few years, and you're actually helping out whatever the areas that you're concerned about, whether it's corporate governance, whatever it might be.
Thank you for letting me slide that last question in there. The name of the book is Stacked.
That's a big one.
It's a good one, right? So the name of the book is Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. My guest has been Joe Saul Sehi. You can listen to him on the Stacking Benjamins podcast. Joe, thank you so much for coming back. We really appreciate it.
Allison, thank you so much for having me again. And have fun with Elvis Costello. I hope he's as good as I was.